Welcome everyone to another episode of the Charity Charge Show. Today I am with Tim Kachuriak, who is the Chief Innovation and Optimization Officer at Next After. Tim, thanks a lot for joining me today.
Yeah, thanks for having me on the show.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm sincerely really excited about this. I mean, one of the things that I've enjoyed the most just hosting this podcast is it's an opportunity for me to learn about so many new topics and opportunities in the nonprofit space. A lot of our show focuses around the different organizations that we work with. But what I think you're going to bring to the table today is just a lot of thoughts on helping nonprofits get into the mindset of why people give, helping them think about or rethink rather their marketing fundraising strategy. So, and I also know I should say that you're on the board of a number of organizations, which I think gives you a lot of just unique insight, probably applying all these things that you've learned. So without further ado, I mean, do you mind telling the audience a little bit, and myself, quite frankly, a little bit more about sort of your personal background, what led you into this, and then, you know, what you're up to today at Next After?
Sure. Yeah, happy to do that. So like many, I took a very indirect path into the nonprofit sector. So I graduated from college right after 9/11, born and raised in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, went to college there. And I desperately wanted to work in the field of advertising and marketing. Well, right after the events of 9/11 was a very tough time for that industry. But I was very connected. So I worked at a country club all during high school and college. So I like to joke, I had 432 aunts and uncles that were captains of industry. And the guy who was the president of the country club also was the president of the second largest ad agency in Pittsburgh. So I went, met with him, did my little dog and pony show, showed him all I could do. And he just started like, you know, wringing in his hands, like, look, man, I'd love to hire you, but 9/11 has hit our industry hard, our agency harder. Sorry, I can't help you. We just laid off 30 people yesterday. So I wandered in the wilderness for about 6 months, just banging on doors, trying to get somebody to give me a shot. And I met a serial entrepreneur, actually at a golf outing. And he's like, well, maybe you can do a couple little freelance projects for some of these little businesses I operate. And I said, well, that sounds cool. And then he said, you know, why don't you start your own business? And I'm like, well, I don't know how to do that. He's like, I do. We've got an incubator on the second floor of our office building. I'll give you a desk. I'll introduce you to people. I'll be your partner. And the rest is up to you, kid. So I'm like looking around. I'm like living in my parents' basement. I've got nothing to lose. So I was like, sure, why not? So my first job was, you know, really just starting this small little business. And we ended up moving out of the incubator and I had a small staff and I learned a lot about business and getting customers and keeping them happy and making payroll and, you know, just taking care of all like the ins and outs of running a business. So it was a great learning experience. And I love what I was doing, but I wasn't super excited about the clients we're working with. Not that they were bad, but we ended up hooking up with a lot of the general market ad agencies in Pittsburgh, and they would outsource their digital stuff to our little boutique. And so we were locked into whatever clients they had, and they had a lot of automotive dealerships and like legal clients, nothing wrong with car dealers and, you know, lawyers. It just didn't really spin my wheels. Right. So my church was doing a capital campaign to build a new building. And I was like, well, you know, maybe we could do all the marketing stuff for that campaign. So I volunteered to do all that. And it was like really cool. It was like the first time that I felt like I was doing something I was wired to do, but for a cause I cared about. And after that, I was like, I don't really think I want to do what I'm doing anymore. And so made a few calls of folks I knew. One was to a friend who had just shut down his business and went to work for a nonprofit, called him. He said, come on down to Florida. I went to work for a nonprofit in Florida. I was there for about 18 months. And then I started to work at an agency in Dallas that recruited me to come work for them. And they had been doing direct mail for 30 years and they were trying to move into digital. I didn't know fundraising. I knew digital. They didn't know digital, but they knew fundraising. So it was kind of a great partnership. So that's how I got in.
Oh, that's awesome. I mean, you come at it from both angles, but I interact with so many people that are now fully in as full-time, you know, founders and employees of nonprofits, and they're transitioning at some point in their career, picking up skills and experience and everything on the from the for-profit side that they transition right in. So, but let's jump into that. I mean, what are some of the practical things that you're doing? I know that you've authored a handful of books, guides. you talk about this. I mean, what are some of the impactful things that you think you can bring to, you know, our audience of nonprofits that are, you know, always trying to figure out how to improve their fundraising strategy?
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty interesting. So, you know, there's kind of three parts to Next After. I think probably the most interesting part to talk about is our fundraising research lab and the things that we do there. But really what we're trying to do is we're trying to understand and decode what moves and inspires people to give. And we use the web as a living laboratory where we can run rigorous scientific experiments to try to figure out what works and what doesn't work. And through the course of the last, I guess, 9 years or so, we've documented over 2,700 different online fundraising experiments. So we've learned some stuff. And I'll give you like a couple of practical things that have been really, I think, interesting to discover, and I think have a lot of applicability to probably a lot of your listeners. And I'll start with the donation page. So if you go to most nonprofit donation pages, they usually don't have a lot of text. They don't have a lot of copy. They usually try to keep it very simple, very clean. Oftentimes the donation form is what is referred to as above the fold, right? We need to make sure that that's like right there in people's face, because if we don't let them see that, then they won't see it. And then they won't give. Well, through the course of running a series of different online fundraising experiments, what we find is that oftentimes what's missing from the page is adding more copy, right? Adding more text. And the reason why is because if you look at the data across the nonprofit sector, less than 25% of the people that click the donate button actually complete the transaction, right? So they're on the website somewhere, they go to the upper right-hand corner, which is where every nonprofit's donation button is. They click the donate button, they get to the donation page, and less than 25% of people actually complete the transaction. So the question is why? Why is that?
Can I stop you? I'm curious. Do you know, I'm thinking about like shopping cart abandonment on the for-profit side, e-commerce, what would that be at? Or is there any comparison statistic or any parallel to draw between?
It's certainly parallel. I don't know the exact figures, but a lot of things get left in shopping carts, right? Like we know that like a lot of people, and if, for whatever reason, they bail, right?
Yeah, I always see studies about how, you know, billions of dollars is left in abandoned shopping carts. But yeah, tell us more about how many billions of dollars are left.
Right. So, think about that. So somebody clicks the donate button, they have signaled an intent to donate to this organization, but they don't fulfill that process. So the question is why? And the reason why is because people don't have their mind 100% made up by the time they've clicked that button. That's one reason. The second reason is that we make it so doggone difficult for people to go through and complete the transaction. Like I've actually gone through many different online giving experiences, and I've counted upwards of like 16 steps to complete a donation. Who's going to go through that, right? So there's two competing forces on the donation page. There is value and there's cost, meaning like the material costs, like how much money you're going to give. But then there's also the mental cost of how much time and effort it takes me to complete the donation. So what we've done a lot of experimentation with is adding value by using more copy that lays out the lucid, compelling reasons why somebody should give, which adds some value to that side of the equation, while at the same time reducing like some of the steps or the fields or the different decisions that people have to make as they go through the process of completing the form. And by making some of those changes, you can see very significant increases. We've seen upwards of 200-300% increase in donation conversion simply by adding more copy that adds value and reducing some of the additional steps in the giving process.
You're talking about, I'm curious, two follow-up questions for you. When you're saying copy, are you talking literally just text, or this include pictures, videos, things of that sort?
Yeah. What's interesting, when we've tested videos on a donation page versus a text transcript of that donation, we've tested it multiple times. What we find every single time is that the text outperforms the video. The greatest example of that is one where we took an actual transcript of the exact words that were contained in the video, put them on the page, and on the alternative version, we had the actual video. The text-based version did a 560% increase in donation conversion. So yes, it's text, but it's not just any text, right? The text has to answer a very fundamental question that every single donor needs to hear the answer to, but they rarely ever verbalize, which is this: if I am the ideal donor, why should I give to you rather than some other organization or not at all? That is the fundamental value proposition question. If we can do a better job of answering that question, I guarantee that you're going to see better fundraising results.
That's pretty amazing. Have you noticed through, first of all, that's just a huge takeaway right there. And it's pretty an insightful thing. I mean, which I'm gonna ask you one question, then I'm going to go into a follow-up, talk about competition or co-opetition between nonprofits. Have you noticed anything you could talk about in terms of, you're talking about everything you just mentioned was the conversion of getting people to click to donate and actually follow through with the donation. Any sense of seeing an uptick in average donation size? Like what about, so you can get them there, you can get them to donate, but what about increasing the amount?
That is a brilliant question. And the reason why is because it actually teases out one of the things I think is a very distinct advantage of being a nonprofit. So compared to our for-profit counterparts, nonprofits have a significant advantage in this. We do not have a fixed price, right? Our customer determines the price. Our donors decide how much they're going to give. And based on our research and based on our findings, yes, there's things you can do to play with the gift array or the different options that you make display of, you know, on the donation form, which can have some significant impact on the amount that people give. But the biggest thing that we find is that when you answer that value proposition question, if I'm the ideal donor, why should I give to you rather than some other organization or not out? And if you answer it effectively, not only does it increase conversion, but it also increases average gift. And that can have a exponential impact on revenue, which is the ultimate goal of what we're trying to do in fundraising. So excellent question. Value proposition, again, is the answer that saves the day.
Let me ask you, you said something there that I sort of want to challenge is too strong of a word, but you know, sort of go deeper in. I think the fundamental thing that organizations would want to do before the money is be able to just start a relationship with someone, right? So a lot of times, especially when you think of these huge national organizations, they're spending millions of dollars a year, quite frankly, like buying lists. I mean, how do we get contact information of people that may be interested in our organization? So a lot of times if I'm thinking about, if I'm a an organization, I just want to get someone to give me anything so that I can use that as an opportunity to, you know, whatever's going to make sense for their scale and their budget, but storytell, remarket, engage with that person. Can you talk at all about that or anything anecdotally that you know about just organizations thinking about their funnel in general and potentially like the donation page is just a point to collect some sort of like initial, you know, because when you check out, you're giving your email, phone, mail address, et cetera. So anything on top of mind as I talk about that aspect of the world?
Yeah. So what I was suggesting with the copy adding to the donation page and how that affects conversion, that's for people that are already there on your website, right? But how are you going to get them there in the first place? Sure. That's, I think, the question that you're asking. And this is like, I think the distinct advantage of digital as a channel and digital fundraising as a potential opportunity for nonprofits to really invest more heavily into. And the reason is this: you're absolutely right. Most nonprofit organizations that have any sense of scale or size have been built historically by renting lists and sending junk mail, right? I say that in like, you know, just in jest that like junk mail, like direct mail has been how most of these different nonprofit organizations have acquired their donors. And it's highly, highly effective. And there's a lot of science behind it. And it's been refined over the last 50 or 60 or whatever years, right? But the challenge with that is, to your point, like I have to mail these things and I have to rely upon that person going from zero. Like I might not even know anything about your organization all the way through to actually making the decision to give me money. Right. And if you look at like the response rate for direct mail campaigns, and a successful direct mail campaign may get 1, 2, 3% conversion, right? Which means that we have like 97% like people that say no, right? But what if you could get something from them? What if you could get their name and their contact information, and you could begin, to your point, build a relationship with that person over time so that they can have a better understanding as to what you do and how they fit in and can have impact by giving a gift through your organization. That's what digital affords you the opportunity to do. We can take various different content that we have. We can repackage it. We can repurpose it. We can turn it into something that represents significant value to our potential donor. We can say, you can have this piece of content that's valuable for free. You just have to give me your name and your email address so I can send it to you, right? A very reasonable request, and you're getting something that, you know, in your mind has higher perceived value. And by doing that, now I can connect the dots from that initial point of interest to the wider opportunity for you to have impact by giving a gift to my organization. So that's why I love digital, because it opens up the opportunity for content marketing, lead generation, and the building of your own prospect list, as opposed to having to rent other people's.
What are some of the, I love how you just went down that. I appreciate, you know, you going with me and coming up the funnel, so to speak, above in the funnel, the donation page. What are you seeing so a lot of organizations, for example, like Google throws out AdWords grants and stuff, and there's restrictions on those. And I see nonprofits like clamoring to do that. But what are some of the things that you guys are, that you're seeing up close and personal, either with the organizations that you're on the board of, which I should give a shout out to, which is Human Coalition, Open Doors USA. You're also an advisory board member for SMU Digital Accelerator, Kids Prosper Kids, and the Blackbaud Institute for Philanthropic Impact. So, dang. And I'm reading your bio. I mean, I'm just looking at your bio. You're married with four kids. So, man, I don't know how you're doing it all, but it's pretty impressive from what I can see. But what are you seeing as some of like just the tactics and the things that have, even if we think about, you know, the shift of COVID over the past year, any anecdotes or things the organizations you've been working with have done differently to bring in more awareness about their organization?
Yeah. So one just quick bit on 2020 and what we saw with COVID-19 and its impact on fundraising, more specifically digital fundraising. So Blackbaud actually put out their charitable giving report for 2020. Digital revenue was up 21% year over year and now represents 13% of total revenue that they track, and they track over $40.7 billion. So it's a pretty large segment. That is the first time it's crossed over 10% of revenue. So that's a huge, huge milestone. The rest of the channels that were non-digital grew by 0.3%. So overall, giving in 2020 actually went up by 2%, which is great. During a global pandemic, people were still giving, but they were giving in greater numbers and in greater amounts through digital. Well, there's obvious reasons for that, right? Our events have been shut down. You know, we're not getting on airplanes and meeting with donors face-to-face. There's a little blip where like mail was, you know, falling into a black hole. And so, you know, really digital became the lifeline between many nonprofits. So back in March of last year, I went to our CTO. We do all these different mystery donor studies. So if you think about it, it's like we subscribe to hundreds of organizations at the same time. We monitor everything they send us and we analyze all that data. So we have this aggregate donor inbox that has literally hundreds of different nonprofits emailing us stuff. And all of our nonprofits are asking us questions like, are people still emailing? Are they still asking for money? Are they mentioning COVID in their communications? And I was like, well, let's look at the data and find out. So we created this coronavirus resource center website, and we created all these data visualizations that answered those questions. What we found is that when you looked at January and February of 2020 versus 2019, the volume of email that nonprofits sent was flat. It hadn't moved year over year at all. Starting in March, the volume of email increased over the previous year, and it just continued with that trend for the rest of the year. And then when we looked at digital giving, we saw that on average, digital giving was up, at least across the segment of organizations we look at, was up 32% year over year. So it's pretty significant. And I think the reason why is because, you know, this became the much needed shove that the nonprofit industry needed into digital transformation, which is kind of what took place. And everybody was going through it together. So we're the donors, right? They're learning how to use Zoom and stuff. Like my parents are like, let's do a Zoom meeting. I'm like, well, how do you even know what that is? You know? So it's like, this was kind of a shared experience that led to this opportunity for everybody to become a lot more digital. And that's been exciting.
No, for sure. I mean, we've seen just with a lot of, I've been super impressed. And I can share an anecdote or two with the organizations that we work with, just how quickly a lot of them figured out how to adapt and leverage Zoom. And I mean, by and large, the organizations that we work with all had actually, from a revenue perspective, better 2020s than they did in 2019. For overall. And a lot of it was, you know, shifting to doing online virtual events, fundraisers, et cetera. They weren't shelling out all that money in advance to book the venue, pay the caterers, et cetera. So they were just netting out much more profitable per event, you know? So I think it was just really cool to be able to see that transition and see these organizations actually figure out ways to thrive. You know, that's all said, we also work with a lot of organizations that run community centers and, you know, in-person places, and they were way down. I mean, it was just kind of the roll of the dice and kind of how the cards fell last year and still through it for a lot of organizations that, you know, adapting was just so far out of their business model. But, you know, appreciate all of this that you're sharing. Talk to us a little bit about, so I know, I mean, we've went over a few things, and I know you've authored or co-authored Online Fundraising Scorecard, Why Should I Give to You, and The Mid-Level Donor Crisis. Can you touch on the sort of point about the mid-level donor crisis? Because I don't know if we've really talked about that yet.
Sure. So I think most people in the nonprofit space like realize that there's a gap inside of our fundraising program. And that gap exists in what's, you know, defined typically as the mid-level donor tier. And mid-level donor tier, depending on the organization, it's usually it's usually donors that are giving more than $1,000 per year, but not more than like say $5,000 or $10,000 a year, right? So they're kind of like they're too big to be considered like, you know, direct response or broad-based donors, right? Which gets all the general communication, but they're not quite big enough to be considered a major donor. So they're kind of in this like weird, like, you know, no man's land. Now, the problem with that is because somebody gives over a certain amount, what a lot of organizations have been doing traditionally is they say, look, these are people that don't look like our, you know, $10, $20, $50, $100 donors. So we shouldn't send them all of these direct mail appeals or emails that all the rest of our FAO are getting. So let's pull them out of that communication stream and let's give them to the major gift officers. Let's put them on their portfolio as a prospect, right? Now, most major gift officers have a portfolio of donors, you know, anywhere from like, you know, 20 or 30 to upwards of like maybe 100 or so donors. Well, the problem is that most major gift officers are focused on trying to hit a certain revenue target number, which means they work the upper part of their portfolio and they rarely touch these prospects, right? So you think about this. This is somebody that signaled that they're really interested in what you're doing because they're giving more than the regular folks, but not quite as big as the big folks. And so they get pulled out of like the regular stream of communication. They get put on this major donor person's task list of contacts, but they never get around to contacting them. So they become disconnected and disenfranchised from the organization. So we wanted to see if that was actually true. So we gave online donations. I think it was like 57 organizations of $1,000 or more. And then we tracked the communication experience that we had. And guess what? It was not great. It confirmed a lot of
our- I love this, by the way. That is so cool that you guys-
It was fun to do. And we learned a ton. And so
I just want to acknowledge like the more that I'm learning about Next, like you personally, and then Next After, that's super cool how you've really turned this into like a lab. And I love the, I mean, you are like the organization itself, especially you're doing a bunch of different things, but the fact that you would just say, well, let's just jump in, let's get firsthand primary data. How are we going to do that? Okay, we're going to donate the money and see what happens. So keep going. That's so cool.
Yeah. So I can remember the exact statistics of several years ago, but like, I think out of all those organizations, maybe one or two of them called us. Mm-hmm. We gave our phone number to all of them, by the way.
Yeah.
One or two of them called us to thank us. I think maybe two sent like a handwritten note. And some of them never even said thank you, right? Which is insane. So there's definitely stuff that's broken. A lot of it's probably just stuff that, you know, over the years, as the organization grows, you know, wires get torn apart and like, you know, something is not making it through the process. But I think that there's an opportunity for technology to solve this issue. And so we actually like then experimented over the next couple of years with something that we call VADR, Project VADR, which stands for Virtual Automated Donor Rep. And basically we said, look, give us all of these mid-level donors that are not major gift prospects, and we'll create a series of very personal one-to-one seeming automated messages that actually are sent from the email address of the major gift officer, but are not asking for money, that are simply just delivering value back to the donor, right? And when somebody replies, or then they call the donor, the gift officer, it'll actually ring their cell phone or their email. So it basically creates this way to automatically cultivate these mid-level donors. And then when they do respond to one of those things, then they can have a real life conversation with the gift officer. And it produced like, you know, pretty interesting results. It actually increased the percentage of people that migrated to major gift. It actually retained a much higher percentage of the mid-level donors. And I think it has lots of potential opportunity and application for other organizations.
That's awesome. I really appreciate you sharing that. And sure. I mean, I can just think through organizations that I've contributed to that, and I'll be, I mean, candidly, the majority of them at the, let's say, sub $500 level, where I would be in that smaller, and then some other organizations where I have made bigger gifts. And by and large, I think that the communication has been pretty poor, but the ones that have been great actually have been great, have been like really exceptional. So I think that, you know, organizations could figure out how to do this. One of the things that probably doesn't happen enough, I mean, I'm just wondering, I'm just trying to think tactically for organizations of even enlisting like board members, right?
Yeah.
To yes. call and thank them. Hey, I'm thanking you, I'm the board member, have a conversation. Like, you never know where it could go. You know, a lot of times too, that, you know, I've even done, you know, if I'm calling to thank someone, I mean, sometimes I know that when I'm calling, it's unlikely that they're going to be there, but I just leave a 30-second voicemail or something.
Yes.
And that's that, you know, and I say, even there's no need to call me back. I just wanted to say, thank you.
So yeah. I've got a sweet little hack for everybody that's listening into the conversation. And if you made it deep into this conversation this far, then you get rewarded with this wonderful treat. There is a way to send automated voicemails to your donors or customers, for that matter. It does not ring their phone. It gets delivered directly as a voicemail. It just looks like a missed phone call on their phone. It's called Sly Broadcast. So go check it out. It's really easy to use. It's awesome. But you can send thousands of these very personal seeming voicemails to all of your donors or customers, you know, at the touch of a button. It's awesome.
That's cool. Thanks for sharing that. I wasn't aware of that. I'm on the website right now, Sly Broadcast, SLYbroadcast.com. We use Salesforce as our CRM. And so they have that. Actually, no, they did have that. We're using Dialpad, which has it, which is like a more, you know, more full robust, but the voicemail drops is a pretty cool, you know, feature as just technology has evolved. Can you, as we're just kind of maybe rounding out this session a little bit, I'd love for you, Tim, to do two things. One, can you give, really it's to me and to the audience, a high level overview, specifically talk about the different service and areas of Next After. And then I know we were talking about the NIO Summit, which is coming up in September. Could you talk about that, please?
Yes. So let me just kind of like give you like, there's basically three pillars to Next After. So we have the fundraising research lab. We do both forensic and applied research. The forensic research, we're analyzing large amounts of data. That's the mystery donor studies. We're looking for patterns and things that we can learn about the gaps that exist. And then we bring it over to the other part of research, which is the applied research, where we're running tests and experiments. we do all that stuff to learn. We're doing it so that we can actually understand what works, what doesn't work. And then we bring everything we learn over to the two other parts of our company. The second part is the Next After Institute, which is the training and equipping arm of Next After. We create tons of resources. Most of them are free. Templates, guides, eBooks, studies, webinars. For folks that want to go deeper, we've developed 8 different certification courses in everything from turning Facebook likes into donors to email fundraising optimization to Google Analytics for nonprofits to copywriting for nonprofits. So anything related to digital fundraising, you can take a 6 to 8 hour certification course. And it's all online now too. So you can do it on demand. And then the other initiative of the Next After Institute is bringing together the nonprofit community and bringing new ideas and innovation in. And that is what led us 6 years ago to start the Nonprofit Innovation Optimization Summit, NIO Summit for short, NIOSummit.com. And that conference will bring 16 to 18 of leading digital marketing thought leaders from all over the world. Most of them come from the for-profit marketing space. They're doing bleeding edge stuff. We bring them together to just pour into our nonprofit community. It's also a ton of fun. We usually have some pretty elaborate themes. I think this year it's going to be Willy Wonka. So the chocolate river, the whole nine. So definitely kind of check that out. That is coming up. It will be back in person this year. It's September 21 to 23 in Austin, Texas. So check out niosummit.com. And then the last piece, which I haven't even talked really about directly at all, is our consultancy. So the other way that we take all the research and the learning, we bring it over to our consultancy. We work with about 36, I think 37 maybe now, nonprofit organizations across North America. They're typically larger organizations, and we're helping to engineer into their fundraising programs the things that we find that really, really work in digital. So we basically function as a digital fundraising agency for those clients.
And is that your primary source of revenue for the organization that helps fund those preceding?
Exactly. Things? Everything else consumes revenue. That's the only thing that actually generates.
Got it. But I think that that's really awesome, right? And sort of as we round this out, and you were talking about up the funnel for nonprofits, you're spending all of this money and resources and time of yours and your staff's creating all this valuable content, studies, learnings, trainings, et cetera, events. And it's all about, you know, building up the know-how and the brand and the reputation first and foremost.
Well, there's a reason why we do that. It's because we discovered along the way that we may not be a nonprofit organization ourselves, but we're very much a cause-based organization.
Sure.
And our cause is to decode what works in digital fundraising and get it into the hands of as many fundraisers as possible so that we can achieve our vision, which is ultimately unleashing the most generous generation in the history of the world. We cannot do that by keeping all the cool stuff to ourselves, right? So we have to be open. We have to share. We have to practice generosity at every turn. And that's just what we're trying to do.
I love that. It's actually really, I love that mission. I love that vision. It's something that I was thinking about a lot. I had a pretty sobering conversation yesterday with one of the groups that we work with. I won't get into the particulars of it, but it was basically, you know, she was sharing how if I say it specifics, you know, I might, you know, do something here that sort of violates some privacy or something, but she's basically sharing how two of their donors actually directly through their business were hurting the nonprofit that they were donating to. So like they're doing all this, you know, and so the ideas I was thinking about a lot is, you know, these statistics may have changed, but generally in the US, I think that on average, we donate 2% of our household income. So I was thinking like, we're spending all of our time creating, right, you know, generating 100% of our income, but we're only giving 2% of it away. And so if 98% of it is doing things that, you know, are destroying the fabric or like creating these social problems, but we're only donating 2%, what is that? And then I thought, well, what if instead it was 3% or 4% or something? Like, what kind of world would we live in? Mm-hmm. So I think it's super cool, your mission and vision, because you're inspiring to me, and you're hopefully inspiring others and going to help all these organizations. So I appreciate that. For everyone listening along, you can find more at nextafter.com. and also the NIO Summit that is in Austin, Texas on September 21st and 23rd is simply niosummit.com. Tim, thank you so much for being with us. Really appreciate it. Anywhere else that, any URLs or anything else you want to mention to people?
I think the website's probably a good place to start. I mean, I'm on LinkedIn and all the other various different social channels, but website's probably the best place to get good things for your nonprofit.
And I'll also add to that too, because I was browsing around here too. On the website, we'll put this in our show notes as well, but there are a variety of different eBooks that you can download that we were going over right on there. So on nextafter.com, super cool and inspiring what you're doing, Tim. Thank you so much.
Awesome. Thanks for having me on the show.